Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining me today from Sarasota, Florida is Charlie Shug. Charlie is a partner and director of Silent, but for most importantly for this conversation, he's a retired Brigadier General in the U.S. Air Force. General, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Oh, thanks, Adam. Look forward to this.
So, when we met at the SEC Utilities and Energy Conference, I was really intrigued by your background. It's not the most typical one that we see at our meetings, but as we talked, it struck me how much there was in common. Can you provide us, from your past experience, the military perspective on the importance of compliance and ethics in operations?
Sure. Trust and confidence is very critical, especially in service organizations. And to be successful in those operations, you need continued support not only from people within your organization, but also the stakeholders that may be connected to your organization. And, the military makes a big deal of that and takes it real seriously. As an example, I'll give some perspective here. Gallup News poll in 2017 asked Americans about the confidence and support they had for institutions. And so when they asked Americans about the U.S. military, 72% said they had a great deal or a lot of confidence in that institution. And that comes from, working on that trust and confidence. Just to compare that, churches and organized religions only had a rating of 41%. And then you go into organized labor and they're figures dropped to 28%. And unfortunately, big business has a 21% of Americans have any confidence or trust in those organizations. So whatever the military is doing, it's doing it right. And it's got a nice foundation there that I think maybe can be used by corporate America.
Well, you said whatever they're doing it right. So what exactly are they doing? How does the military view compliance and ethics as part of, their structures?
Well, we look at the compliance and ethics are almost seamless aspects to military operations. We look at compliance, the simplistic way of looking at compliance is it's a set of guidelines that keep us focused to ensure that we're achieving what we went out to achieve with our missions. And so you've got the compliance part going, but the ethics part on top of that is really how to go about accomplishing those things. So not only we have a sort of a pathway or a runway to what we want to be accomplishing, but we also have almost a set of bumpers that tell us how to do it in ethical and moral ways. So, the overall goal from this would be to have a solid set of compliance along with ethical foundation. Because the reason it might be unique to the military or more important to the military, but there's certainly applicability to the corporate side of things, is that at certain points of time, there's going to be a stressful situation or a crisis situation. And when those things occur, you've got to rely on instincts and your characteristics that you've instilled in people to what's going to be their action, what's going to be the first thing they need to do, what's going to rise to the top and influence what they're going to do. So there's no second thought, there's no hesitation. They know what to do based on their training.
Yeah, and certainly in the military situation, you're dealing with some of the most stressful situations there are, far more than what's going on in a corporate setting. Now, obviously, there's some huge downside when things go wrong in the military. What are some of the examples that you feel comfortable talking about that occur when there's a breach in compliance and ethics in the military?
Sure, the two examples that sort of come to mind, which were big ones, one, almost a decade later, but they still, seem embarrassing or a black mark on the military. One involved in 2007, one of the most highly compliant areas that we have in the military revolves around nuclear weapons. And so they live and breathe compliance day to day. one of the problems is that as you get in that environment, sometimes you get lulled into a sense of just day-to-day things. And if you don't keep it dynamic, and if you don't keep the audience and the stakeholders involved all the times with potential things that could go wrong, things will go wrong. In this case, what happened is they were going to take some cruise missiles that hang on the B-52 bomber, and they're going to change them out with from a base up north to a base in Louisiana. And to do that, they're going to put on dummy nuclear warheads on these cruise missiles and take them down and swap them out. The only problem was is they had two racks of six each, one to go on each wing, and unfortunately, one of the racks didn't have dummy nuclear warheads on it, but had real nuclear warheads on it. That rack missed the inspections, missed oversight, got loaded up on the aircraft. The aircraft sat for a day before going down, but because they didn't know that there were real weapons on there, they weren't secured like they usually were. They were flown down there. On the other end of the situation, it was the same thing. Once again, they inspected only one side, confirmed they were the dummy warheads, let the aircraft stay out unprotected like it should have been protected with real weapons on it. And only after a day or so did they discover that, hey, on this other side of the wing, these weapons look a little different, and found out it was truly nuclear weapons on the other side that were live weapons. Now, the repercussions of all that, the trust and everything flowed all the way up. And eventually, when it was all over, the Secretary of the Air Force and the Chief of Staff of the Air Force were fired by the Defense Secretary. And all of the people involved in that whole chain eventually lost their jobs, lost their careers. And the units that were involved in that all went back to a status of they had to prove to themselves from day one that they followed their compliance and worked their way back to a normal security setting. So that it took a big chunk out of the not only the military itself, but all those organizations and a lot of people's individual lives. You know, and so that's the compliance side. Another idea of a failure in ethics side goes back to the Iraq war with Abu Ghraib prison, where all of a sudden we had Air National Guard units that knew what to do, were a little bit caught up in the whole idea of capturing bad people and, you know, and maybe letting their emotions get the better of them, and started to treat the prisoners in unethical means, which got out. And now, once again, the trust and confidence that the whole world had in the U.S. forces on law and order and how to treat people, and that we adhered to the laws of warfare, all of a sudden went out the window based on a handful of people who were young service members who just lost track of what their values were and what their ethics were, and allowed emotions to take over. So two examples of noncompliance and unethical behaviors by just a small group of people led to catastrophic enterprise-wide consequences. And if that happened to a corporate entity, it could mean the end of the corporate entity.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's certainly scary all around both examples of what happened. And obviously, unsecured nuclear weapons is just, you know, terrifying to think about. So, you know, with ethics and compliance being so critical to success in the military, you know, and from, you know, you shared lessons learned from that, you know, those examples. What are some things that the private sector could use from techniques that the military uses to drive home ethics and compliance and learn from mistakes?
Well, you know, the military puts that whole mindset in from day one, right off the bat. And it's just constantly reinforced through conscious training. And I think the most important and effective way is that we try to incorporate it into day-to-day examples as much as possible. Either in small talks or in situations that happen, and then we almost take a time out and say, no, this is what happened, and this is why I made these certain decisions here, and allows everyone to sort of go through the scenario with other people and their workforce to realize that that's why those compliance guidance is there, and that's why some of these ethical guidance is there in order to get to the right solution. I mean, we find it's very effective, especially when senior management's playing this role. And so when senior management starts, you know, giving insight on how they make decisions and how and why they make those decisions, next thing you know, middle management's doing it, and it's flowing through the whole organization.
Interesting. Now, you're an Air Force Academy graduate. What are your thoughts of codes of conduct, such as an honor code? I mean, those are very important, I know, at the academies.
You know, the military has lots of codes of conduct, and they typically focus on specific situations that someone has determined requires some focused ethical guidance. And so they're great in that way. They're great in studies. They're great in getting people to think about things. You know, we have them for conduct of prisoner of war and overall conduct. But one of the shortfalls of those codes of conduct is that sometimes in an effort to give a solid foundation or grounding, they become lengthy. And sometimes they become very structured or focused. And so it's very hard to, once you read them and you try to embrace them, it's great, but it's very hard to necessarily memorize them or to necessarily instill them and have them easily recallable. You know, the honor code is another one of those things, but a little different. It's pretty simple. Most honor codes and many other institutions of higher learning have honor codes, not just military academies, but they're not necessarily referenced all the time. You know, you aren't necessarily taking a test all the time, or you aren't writing a paper all the time, or you aren't necessarily looking for whether you're going to steal or someone's going to lie. It's not a day-to-day kind of thing. And so sometimes if you're not referencing that or making yourself familiar with in a day-to-day time frame, when a crisis situation comes or you have to make a snap decision, it may not be the first thing you reference. You may reference your emotions, or you may reference something else that happened to occur earlier to that situation.
So in your opinion, what has been one of the most successful military efforts in establishing a firm foundation for the highest level of ethics and conduct?
Well, you know, one of the problems is you can't cover all instances. And, you know, when you're trying to get a world-class compliance and ethics program going, and sometimes we end up doing more harm, and we end up sometimes overwhelming the audience with all the different things they can read, they should follow, get examples from, and everything. So one of the things I think is prudent that the military is learning as part of that foundation of starting right off the bat and building on things is to establish a clear, concise, and all-encompassing foundation. In the military, we refer to that as our core values. You know, so a core value is something that it provides a vehicle that people can easily memorize. If you memorize it, you can recall it, and then you can use it, once again, as I talked about, as sort of bumper guards when maybe your other cognitive facilities aren't necessarily at their best and you're being overwhelmed by things at the moment. You can fall back on those core values, and it gives you an initial direction to go to and take care of things.
Yeah, and one of the things, though, with core values is always the challenge of coming up with what the best ones are and how to communicate it. Can you provide a few hints on how to construct core values? And, you know, should they be unique to an organization? Is it better if they're sort of common ones that people talk about?
It's a great question, because a lot of people will jump on maybe a best practice or something and just reuse someone else's. You know, the core value has been around forever, so there's going to be lots of examples. and they've been used to help shape the survival of cultures and organizations throughout time. But I think what we've learned and throughout the history, everything, is that successful core values are very short. Just a few words may have 2 to 3 values associated with them, so that they're easily remembered. And the other thing is, if you can, to rank order them in importance and breadth. You know, I'll give you an example. The United States Air Force's core values are integrity first, service before self, and excellence in all we do. So if you think about it, if that person is in a crisis situation, if all they can remember is integrity first, you know, you've got them stepping off on the right foot and getting everything going. You know, one of the examples of core values that is just brilliant, and the military has used it, and is, along with other things that Walt Disney's done in their Leadership Institute, is that Walt Disney established some core values that, if you look at them, are just brilliantly thought out. You know, he had a vision for his guests to come to his resorts to achieve just the most enjoyable experience they could have. And to achieve that, he felt that they had to be treated courteously. They had to be amazed with the showmanship that was going on. And then most importantly, they would be safe during that whole experience. So therefore, you know, he went out and he set up his core values, which I believe they call keys in the Disney world. And he said he wanted to be safety, courtesy, and showmanship. And later on, they added efficiency to that list. But Walt Disney wanted there to be no doubt in his employees' mind or to have any conflict within those core values. And the example he thought of was that if one of his employees was being courteous to the guests at the park and making their experience better, whether it be a character or whatever it may be, and there was a cry for assistance from one of the people in the park, that character or that person that was being courteous shouldn't have to worry about whether they should stay with their customer there and continue to be courteous or to go for the cry for help. So that's why he put in the first thing was safety, and then courtesy, and then showmanship, so that each employee knew if they ever were to hear help or they need someone need assistance, their first instinct was to immediately courteously disconnect from who they were with and go to the person who needed help. So back to those crisis situations, you know, every employee knew exactly what to do and what the priority was and what the most important thing that they needed to do in the course of their day. So it was clear and it was simple, and it was a foundation for all their employees' actions. And it's in place today and it works well. So if I were to give any final piece of advice here for our audience today, it would be to start off and create a clear, simple, and very effective organizational core values that would be a foundation for more detailed guidance. And they should be very unique to that organization's core values, because everyone's going to be a little different. And so there has to be that connectivity to the organization's operations and to the employees. And therefore, when that occurs, I think you achieve what you need to achieve when the employees and the stakeholders then grab those core values and take ownership and then run with it.
Well, General, thank you so much for all of that advice and sharing so much of your background with us. Thanks to all of you who took the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SEC and HCCA saying I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspectives.